Today is November 9th, 2016. My name is Christine Cook. I am talking with Brad Hales, owner of People's Records in Detroit and bassist for the band Human Eye at his record store on Livernois in Detroit.
Hello.
Hello. So tell me how you got involved in the music industry in Detroit.
Well, even, I guess, from playing music as early as age 10, I started playing the guitar and learning about a lot of different kinds of music through my parents' albums, which were mostly classic rock, and then from the sounds you could hear on the radio back then between WDT and then definitely the Electrifying Mojo and programs like Radio in Motion, Radios in Motion. You'd hear all these different things on the radio that could lead you down a lot of different interesting musical avenues. And so I was discovering punk and jazz at the same time, and rap music and hip hop were still kind of, you know, in, not really in their infancy, but they were still young and healthy. And so it was just an exciting time to be around and take it all in. Mm-hmm. And it just led to me trying to find jobs where I could, you know, do something with music, which because it was what I enjoyed the most. So I worked in a Musicland shop in the mall first, and then Encore Records in Ann Arbor in the mid-90s, then Desirable Discs in Dearborn at the end of the 90s before opening my own shop, People's Records, in 2003.
Okay, and when did you start? You said that, you know, when you first got it started, you were interested in punk, you were interested in, but what
first got interested
what time?
In, I mean, when I was a child, I remember buying 45s myself at a garage sale when I was four, like before we moved to Florida. When I was, because I remember, you know, seeking out my own music even then, and really, you know, begging my parents to buy me certain songs that I liked and things like that. So I was always trying to acquire music, play music, you know, having a toy drum set as a kid, taking guitar lessons at age 10.
Mm-hmm. What year? What year was that?
Let's see. If I was 10, it would have been 1984.
1984. Okay, great. So you are also a bassist. You learned how to play guitar. So tell me about your band.
Oh, I play with kind of a psychedelic punk group called Human Eye.
Mm-hmm.
That's existed for about 10 years now, although we haven't been very active in the past year. Our leader is Timmy Vulgar, who also led the cloned effects, and currently is more active group Timmy's Organism. So it's kind of an art punk band, I guess. Sometimes with paint flying everywhere, loud psychedelic guitar, and you know, sometimes an improvisational approach, and other times more like a punk band.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a lot of fun. A lot of the songs have space themes, or kind of science fiction and conspiracy theory kind of subject matter. So a lot of weird stuff, but also like a fun approach to it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not too heavy-handed or preachy, but more fun.
Okay, so you say psychedelic punk, is that like Iggy and the Iggy Pop?
That's definitely something we like.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes our music is faster than that, but that's definitely somebody that we like.
Mm-hmm. What other
influences?
Touchstone
for that. I mean, to someone who, let's say that someone had listened to a lot of punk bands, you could say that it was similar to The Who or Jimi Hendrix in terms of, like, level of intensity or, like, what, you know, the styles of music.
So 60s punk versus,
I guess,
70s
so.
Punk.
Mm-hmm. But that's okay. Still in there.
Yeah, oh yeah,
and
absolutely.
80s and stuff. Those, I mean, we've, you know, we like all that too, or it all goes into the soup somehow.
Right, right, right. Okay, so you play the bass, you play guitar, any other instruments?
Well,
I've played
I've played with lots of R&B and other musicians as well. I've played bass for Rodriguez,
mm-hmm.
For Cody Black, who's now passed away, a legendary Ohio and Michigan R&B singer.
Mm-hmm.
I played bass with Nathaniel Mayer, who was with Fortune Records in the early 60s.
Okay, right.
And had a big national hit with The Village of Love. So
mm-hmm.
I got to play with him before he passed away, as well as playing with a soul band now currently called The Ultimate Ovation, which is a vocal group, like a family vocal group that's been together since the 70s.
Hmm.
So I got to play with Kenny Martin before he passed. I played with the punk singer John Brannon and a group called Easy Action for a few years, kind of before I was starting the record shop, and that took everything over.
Okay, right.
So, always trying to play different rock and R&B people that are older than me and have more experience, and I can learn from them, and
right.
I like their music and think it's good. So
exactly.
It's fun.
Exactly. So how did the band form? How did Human Eye form?
Well, I wasn't in the band initially, but I saw their first performance because I was already a fan of the Glowned Effects. So when they started and it was something new and fresh from that, I was really excited and thought, oh, this is the best band in town. And mm-hmm. So when they needed a bass player, I just asked if, oh, can I please, do this? I'd really love to do that. And so I was really happy that I got the chance to play with them.
Great, great. So how did you get into the record business?
Between working at record shops, I'd taken a job at Wayne State University, mm-hmm. but I really wanted to find records for myself as a DJ. And just, it seemed like everything was escaping and kind of just all getting sold away to people who were going to take it out of town and sell it, or people who were going to put everything on eBay. So I wanted to have a store as kind of a retainer for that, where we do need to sell some stuff on the internet to make ends meet, but you can also, I'd rather if you came in here and bought it from me instead,
mm-hmm.
So it was a way to find, I opened the store as a way to find the things I was looking for. Just by using my own collection as a start, I just said, well, we'll get a place and I'll put all my things in there and just sell one and then buy more with that. So it just started like that with no kind of savings and no business plan or knowledge. Just kind of haphazardly.
Great. And you said it started about 12 years ago?
2003.
Okay. And where has it been? Because I know you said there's been 6 locations.
We started in the basement of the Forest Arms Apartments next to Wayne State, which famously burnt down in 2008.
Mm.
And now
were your records in there too?
Yes. Oh. Our store was in the basement, and so this was a fire that burnt all night from 2 in the morning or so it started, and burnt through till the morning and everything. So the top 2 floors were burnt out, and yeah. Then our stuff in the basement was just flooded. And then they boarded up the building, so there was mold and ice and just everything.
I think I remember that fire.
We started over and then moved to 2 different locations on Woodward Avenue, where we kept getting priced out of the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and then landed in Eastern Market at our friend Joel and Rebecca's place, Trina Sof, which is a fantastic cafe and gallery and music venue there in the Eastern Market. So they offered us a much larger place where we could expand on our museum idea and mm-hmm. kind of unpack a lot more, have more room.
Right.
And then we finally started this place where we are now, and Livernoy in the Green Acres neighborhood of Detroit by Baker's Keyboard Lounge.
Okay, and let's see. So how did this one start? We're at Livernoy today, right?
Mm-hmm. That place was getting too cluttered, so mm-hmm. I wanted to clear out a lot of things and try to make it more streamlined again, and focus on the museum idea there, and mm-hmm. try to develop a radio station in there and have a community radio outlet.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an effort to do that, but in moving up here, this place kind of wound up taking over for me, where I'm not able to get down there because I have to mind this
mm-hmm.
to get this place off of its feet. So.
Off of its feet?
onto its feet, sorry. Yeah. Off of its back, I guess.
Yeah. So,
we're just working here and getting this one together. It's growing every day mm-hmm. since May.
Mm-hmm. So it's been here since May.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So tell me what you're looking for with People's Records. You said that you started it to basically get some of the stuff that you were interested mm-hmm. in, but what is its personality now? What kind of records come in here?
We're known for jazz and R&B records, which is something that Detroit has that not all cities do, but we have such a fantastic history here. for both of those things. So those are areas that we focus on and specialize in, as well as blues and gospel and dance music. We find what rock we can. We have a section for everything. Like, we sell hip hop and country and classical and opera and, you know, comedy and everything else, children's records, but not very much.
Mm-hmm.
So the focus and what people come in asking us for is primarily jazz and R&B and then dance music for DJs.
Mm-hmm.
They buy a lot of 12-inch singles and soul 45s for dancing.
Mm, okay.
So
in comparison to, say, you said that you worked for Encore Records and a couple of other places, personality-wise, how are they different from what you've done?
I felt really similar to Encore when it was a family business, and that it was somewhat chaotic, and it gave me the feeling that I could do it too, working there. I really liked how they were just always kind of bursting at the seams and just stacks of everything everywhere, and you'd never really get caught up, and if you did, it meant that it wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because there should just be stuff coming in and piling up everywhere if it's going to be interesting.
Right.
So, I just wanted to stay busy and stay on my feet and work alongside the people that are working with me, like doing the same jobs and
mm-hmm.
all that. I just liked how they operated and kind of loose. And it wasn't like working at the shop in the mall. It was more like working in a family business, which I appreciated.
Mm-hmm. That was like Encore?
Encore.
Okay, what about music? You were at Musicland too?
Mm-hmm. But that was just terrible. I mean, just working at a CD store in the mall. Mm-hmm. I mean, still having to wear a tie. I remember it was at the time that Nirvana Nevermind came out.
So oh, yeah.
But I remember working there, having to wear a tie, being at the mall and just being like, oh, I want to work in a music store, but this really is terrible.
This wasn't exactly what I had in
not
mind.
Not really. Finally getting a job at Encore and getting mm-hmm. exposed to jazz and classical more and a lot of different music up there that I, you know, wouldn't have heard, like, you know, krautrock and electronic music and just mm-hmm. all this crazy stuff you might encounter in Ann Arbor.
Right.
Just
right.
stuff from around the world. So that was a good like all-around education
mm-hmm.
before coming to Detroit into Desirable Discs, where you're swimming in jazz and R&B, which in Ann Arbor, the jazz records are pathetic compared to what you would see, and or it's all jazz, but by just white artists.
Right. Pat Metheny.
Yeah, lots. I mean, no shortage of that. No shortage of Dave Brubeck, and they're fine artists. I'm not mm-hmm. putting them down, but coming to Detroit and seeing, you know, how many independent, you know, companies there were, and just different things you'd never heard of and never dreamed of seeing, you know, because this was kind of the internet was in its infancy too, so you wouldn't learn about records online like mm-hmm. people can now.
Right.
Find them by digging in the field or seeking out reading material and, you know, talking to other people, examining mixes and radio programs that other DJs had made, and, you know, really having to study and learn in a more organic way.
Right. Well, and this was a birthplace for a lot of different forms of music,
right.
really. Like, hip hop had a strong group of people here who were doing it, and blues, a lot of people came up with the 1940s when they were building cars, and
right.
then they played blues here. So
definitely John Lee Hooker, and
mm-hmm.
in the 50s, what's really interesting is that the two before Motown, you had the Fortune Record Company
mm-hmm.
on Third, and then Jovan Battle's JVB Records,
mm-hmm.
and which over in the Black Bottom area, which was decimated. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, Joe's Record Shop, which he owned, you know, these places were like local outlets that were recording and then pressing, not manufacturing them, but recording and distributing their own stuff, you know, and they would have all different types of music together. Fortune had R&B and blues, but they also had gospel and Hungarian music, country music, rockabilly,
mm-hmm.
funk,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, just such a wide cross-section of things, doo-wop and girl groups,
mm-hmm.
But no, never just one thing. They always, you know, if somebody displayed talent, they'd, sure, we'll record it and put it out, let's
right.
see,
right.
you're interesting, you know, can
right.
you, do you, can you record, you know, something good, just, so, in the JVB, same thing, like girl groups, blues, and their most notable artist was C.L. Franklin, Aretha's dad.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the hugest, you know, like before televangelist, kind of like record evangelist.
Wow.
You know, just selling, you still can't go through a stack of records in Detroit without seeing some of his.
Oh, cool.
So these were huge independent kind of family companies before Motown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that opened it, just opened the floodgates for everyone to say, well, I'm going to have a record label and put out, release something. So one of the most interesting things you can look at if you want to study Detroit music is Ben Blackwell made a map of Detroit record labels.
Oh.
So if you look at this Google map and you look at the density of the dots, you'll see that from West Grand Boulevard to 8 Mile and from Woodward to Grand River, this whole area is so densely dotted with independent record companies for decades that might have only had one release. They might have had 20 or 30. Or like in Fortune's case, they had hundreds and hundreds.
Right.
But so many people were putting out 78s, 45s, albums, 12-inch singles, you know. Archer Records never went out of business here. People every day come into people's records and they say, oh, I hear vinyl's making a comeback. And it's like, no, you used to have to wait a few months to get a record pressed in Detroit, but you could always do it. But there would always be a line.
Right.
Whether it was the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, Archer Records never quit manufacturing records here within the city.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kept alive by dance, by, well, first, you know, Motown and that type of era, but then dance music and hip-hop sustained it in a lot of dark years by still constantly releasing 12-inch singles, new ones all the time, and then punk and indie groups releasing 7-inch singles. So they were always kept very, very busy. And now you might have to wait 6 months to a year to get a record pressed.
Right.
So.
Are they still open?
Mm-hmm.
They still sure are. So they're still one of the ones that are making the the comeback.
Yeah. But the major labels keep them so busy pressing up reissues of records that aren't even that hard to find in the first place. They'll just put out a common record and then charge $30 for it now. So
it's insane.
The whole thing's kind of a mess.
So it looks to me, looking around, that it's mostly just exclusively records. Is that correct?
We have very few CDs and tapes. I mean, sometimes we'll wind up with some, or a friend will release something like that, and we'll carry it because we know and like the person, but it's not anything we're seeking out. We don't really order new music except for local independent dance singles. So we'll get a lot of, you know, 12-inch singles by, you know, by people that we like. Or
Are they at 45 RPM or?
45 and 33 both on these singles, kind of arbitrarily, just for whichever one sounded better for that piece of music. So sometimes one side will be 33 and the other will be 45 and neither will be marked.
Right. Oh, good.
And so you have
you'll
to kind of
figure it out eventually.
Or not. You might say, oh, I liked this one better like this. You'll find out that wasn't even the right speed.
Sounds like just Nash the Slash.
Your own personal taste.
Okay, so I did read an article where they were talking about how you get the records in and then you do something to prepare them before you sell them. And I assume that that's cleaning them, perhaps, or is that correct?
We have to do lots of cleaning,
definitely,
because with 45s, they're very rarely ever in their sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of ways you can do it now. The most state-of-the-art way, which I'd like to start finding out more about, is ultrasonic cleaning. In the same way they would clean jewelry, they people have made adaptations to these kinds of ultrasonic tanks where you can make something to hold the record and spin it and rotate it inside the water. And apparently it makes them sound much, much better than even cleaning them on the kind of machines that audiophile stores sell. So we're just constantly, it's kind of like a car wash for records. I mean, doing actual restoration work where you can repair a scratch or something, it is a science that exists, but it's pretty difficult and time consuming and not an exact science either.
Right.
You can use a magnifying glass and some kind of metal implement to kind of make a record that skips play again. I mean, that's not unheard of, this kind of science, or flattening warped records, or figuring out how to remove years of nicotine and cooking grease and just whatever they might, basement backup, you know, who knows what's accumulated. You don't want to know what's accumulated on them in a lot of cases. Hey, Johnny. Could you grab this, please? I'm sorry.
Yeah, mine keeps... Might have to take that out.